Wednesday, August 14th. There was little air activity over Britain today in comparison to the fighting of the last 3 days. In the early morning hours, German bombers attacked the Midlands and Wales, and London reported some damage was caused. In Berlin, there was an air raid alarm shortly after midnight, and then it was reported that German anti-aircraft batteries had turned back RAF planes 10 miles away from Berlin. And now for the news in the German capital, as reported by Edwin Hartrich. Go ahead, Berlin.
This is Berlin. So far this morning, there have been no new bulletins issued by the German high command indicating that heavy air attacks on Great Britain are continuing into the fourth day, that we may have news of the activities of the German Air Force later in the day. But if the aviators have been given a temporary rest, there's no let-up on the war being waged by the Ministry of Propaganda against the British Ministry of Information and the Churchill government. The bone of contention is the discrepancy in the losses reported by the Germans and by the British, or I should say, the conflict about which Air Force shot down the greatest number of enemy planes. The German papers this morning are emphatic as regards to one statement. They accuse the British of falsifying their plane losses and exaggerating their victories. London is not willing to admit that the Germans have gained superiority in the air, writes one paper. Then the Beitzer am Mittag claims that the English counties on the Channel coast have been placed under martial law so as to prevent the British people from discovering the extent of the destruction done to Portsmouth, Portland, and other harbors. And the Berlin papers are printing front-page stories about the worldwide interest and reactions to the German air raids on England. Here are some of the headlines to give you an idea of their content. Tremendous interest in the United States. The whole world dazzled by German successes. And the German radio this morning, in discussing the attacks, announced, quote, "In fact, the American papers already speak of German air domination over the Channel," end quote. This morning, the German news agency has issued a revised list of losses suffered by the British in yesterday's air fights. According to the new account, the British Air Force lost a total of 132 pursuit planes and bombers yesterday. And here is the breakdown of this new report. The Germans claim that 74 planes of the Royal Air Force were shot down over the Channel and England yesterday. Then, a complete flight of 16 Bristol Blenheim bombers was shot down when they attempted to attack the Aalborg Airport in Denmark. The 100% destruction of this flight marks the one perfect bullseye in the German reports. Another 42 planes were destroyed on the ground in England yesterday, or shot down while flying over Germany. Then some fresh details about yesterday's engagements are also released this morning from official quarters. German bombers attacked harbors, factories, ships, balloon barrages, and anti-aircraft batteries in England yesterday. The docks and quays of Wallsend, Hartlepool, Plymouth, and Bournemouth, a south coast resort town, were also bombed. Incidentally, when I visited Bournemouth 3 years ago, the only quay sticking out from the sandy beach was an amusement pier stretching about 1,000 feet into the English Channel. The High Command reports this morning that armament factories at Bristol and Exeter were bombed yesterday, and a large oil depot at North Billingham. Airports at Eastchurch, Belting, Farnborough, and Odiham, O-D-I-H-A-M, were also bombed. The Germans claim the 30 British planes were destroyed on the ground at these fields, as well as hangars, gasoline dumps, and buildings. Then a balloon barrage at Folkestone on the south coast was attacked, and 12 of the balloons were shot down. And with this revised report issued this morning, the total number of British planes that the German state they have shot down is posted to 281 for 3 days, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. And in that period of intensified aerial activity, the Germans say that they lost only 69 planes. Incidentally, their losses of 13 planes yesterday has now increased to 24 ships. At the Foreign Office this morning, it was stated that Germany will accept the Italian version regarding the conflicting reports of the Greek-Albanian dispute. And then this morning, there's an item that Norwegian copper, sulfur, and iron mines are being reopened under German supervision. Some of these mines have not been worked since 1789. This is Edwin Hartrich. I return you now to Columbia in New York.
That was Edwin Hartrich reporting from the German capital. And here is a dispatch we have just received. Rome. British planes this morning bombed Milan, Turin, Alessandria, and Tortonia in northern Italy. An Italian communique says 12 persons were killed and 44 wounded in Milan. and it claims one was killed and 8 wounded at Turin and 9 killed at Alessandria. Now, for the report of Larry LeSueur, we take you to the British capital. Go ahead, London.
This is London. The score of yesterday's massed German raids on Britain is announced as a new record this morning. 78 German planes are claimed to have been shot down. 13 British fighter planes were destroyed, but 10 of the pilots will live to fight another day. Some 500 planes were reported over England yesterday, probably the greatest number of destructive air weapons this war has yet known. Responsible quarters here are of the opinion that the past week's raids on Britain are being carried out to test Britain's resistance in the air. This test is believed preliminary to an invasion. In smaller numbers, the German planes continued during the night and early today the attack on Britain. Points in England, Wales, and Scotland were bombed. Unconfirmed reports reached London yesterday that the southeast coast, that is, the coast nearest France, had been shelled by long-range German artillery. So I hurried down to the coast to attempt to confirm this new phase of the Battle of Britain. Darkness had fallen by the time I reached there, but the district was undergoing its fifth air raid alarm in 24 hours. Next morning, shortly after the sun came up, over German-conquered France across the Channel, the air raid siren sounded again. I stood out on a balcony of my hotel, the very place which reports to America claimed was spattered by machine gun fire the day before. I saw no evidence of machine gun bullets on or around the hotel. When I questioned my colleagues about this, they merely smiled knowingly. I could see nothing except the wave-tossed channel and the silver-painted barrage balloons riding high overhead. But an airplane was droning, out of sight in the clouds. Then came the nervous, angry stutter of a machine gun. The big elephant-like balloon, about a quarter mile from the hotel, began to collapse. A great puff of yellow flame and black smoke mushroomed out of it. It sank slowly out of control. The long cable holding it to the truck whipped off and lashed into the sea. The engine drone in the clouds continued. Again, that angry chatter. Another fat, benign-looking balloon sagged like a stricken elephant and fell slowly, gushing smoke and flame. Then the droning in the clouds ceased, and the all-clear signal sounded. I learned where the reported shells had fallen the day before and walked over to the area. I saw a large yellow stucco house with its roof completely ripped off. Soldiers were examining shell fragments which lay nearby. They assured me that nothing but a cannon-fired shell could have caused that damage, that the pieces they picked up were certainly shell fragments. They said the house had been blown up 10 minutes after the all-clear had sounded, when there were no enemy planes overhead. I examined another point where a reported shell had fallen. It was in the side of a road. There was a very small crater. Apparently, the missile had exploded on impact. There were many smaller holes in the earth nearby, undoubtedly shrapnel. There were 3 other reported shell craters in the vicinity. None of them were as conclusively the result of artillery fire as the first 2. I was told by the soldiers that the shell fragments denoted a relatively small caliber missile, about 8 or 9 inches in diameter. This fits with the evidence of Big Bertha, which fired on Paris from about 70 miles away in the last war. A small shell lobbed high into the stratosphere with a huge powder charge behind it. Ordnance experts explained to me that the German guns were probably more distant than the 22 miles separating France from England. Probably about 10 miles inside the French coast, well camouflaged to conceal them from cameras of the Royal Air Force spotting planes. We have just had a hint here of what Britain's answer may be to offers to send food to German-conquered territories. A motion is expected in the House of Lords today. In effect, it will call attention to the danger of famine threatening friendly people under Nazi domination and ask whether Britain will allow food to go to these parts of Europe if the German forces are withdrawn. We return you now to CBS in New York.
That was Larry LeSueur speaking to you from the British capital. And here in New York, Linton Wells is standing by with more news and his analysis of the news. Mr. Wells.
The sudden lull in German air raids on the British Isles this morning, as our correspondents Edward Hartridge and Larry LeSueur just reported from Berlin and London, probably indicates that the Nazis, having felt out the enemy, so to speak, are now marshaling their might for an even more vigorous onslaught. For 3 days, the Germans have blasted away intensively at British factories, airports, communications, and civilian centers. Now, quite likely, they are studying the effects of incendiary and high-explosive bombs and are preparing to strike at what they now believe to be the most strategic points. Their hope, in fact, their salvation, is to win quick superiority in the air and thereby make an invasion possible. Recently, the Nazis undoubtedly have suffered far greater aircraft and personnel losses than they admit. But as those losses are likely less than the British claim, they have made little more than a dent in the tremendous force which Goering has been able to build up in Germany. So during the coming days, we may well expect to hear about air attacks on an even greater scale, with wave after wave of bombers roaring over the English, Scottish, and Welsh countrysides, seeking to destroy all life, manufacturing establishments, sources of supply, and above all, morale. And if I know anything about the British and about the effects of bombing raids, the Nazis must shoot the works on a truly horrible scale during the next 50 days. Otherwise, the future will be even more doubtful than it is now. The next week or so should reveal if the Germans have the capacity to do just that. The Swiss had air raid scares last night as British planes roared across Switzerland, headed for effective bombings of industrial centers in northern Italy. But this morning, the Swiss have more reason to turn fearful eyes toward Italy and Germany than toward the skies. Today, the Italian newspaper Regime Fascista of Cremona began an attack against Switzerland, which looks like another buildup for action against a neutral. Sneering at Swiss neutrality, the Regime Fascista accused Swiss newspapers of insulting Germany and Italy and advised Italians living in Switzerland to defend themselves. The Italian paper said that Italy cannot remain indifferent when fascism and its men are offended and when false news is published with the aim of discrediting Italy. Then it concluded with this warning: all great events arise from small episodes and great oaks from little acorns grow. Coincidentally with this new press attack against Switzerland, the Italian newspapers are intensifying their campaign against Greece. Yesterday, Premier Metaxas of Greece firmly rejected official Italian suggestions that Greece formally renounce British guarantees of her independence and territorial integrity and place herself under the protection of the Rome-Berlin Axis. Consequently, the Italian press is now charging that the Metaxas government, with supreme arrogance, as it terms it, has designs on Albanian territory which must be destroyed by quick and decisive action. So it is not improbable that soon we shall be hearing about Italian punitive action against Greece. In such an eventuality, observers are pondering over what action Turkey will take. The Turks are treaty-bound to enter the war with England if there is any change in the status quo in the eastern Mediterranean. Well, there was a change in the status quo when Italy declared war 2 months ago, but nothing happened vis-a-vis Turkey. So treaties being what they are these days, it may well be that nothing will happen so far as Turkey is concerned should Italy invade Greece. But if Italy should manage to gain a good foothold in Greece, she will be in a better position to hamper British fleet operations in the eastern Mediterranean and also to attack Palestine and sources of British oil supply in the Near East. There doesn't seem to be much change in the Anglo-Italian situation in British Somaliland. The British say that their Somali forces have been fighting the Italians since Sunday at Jugargan Pass, 43 miles south of Berbera in the vicinity of Adadle, and have broken up several general attacks. The Italians say they have occupied Adadle. The real significance of this news is that the Italians apparently abandoned any attempt by its main Hargeisa column to reach Berbera on the main road leading there from Odwena through the mountains by way of Barau and Sheikh, and struck off on what is little more than a trail. If they have occupied Adadle, they can now move into the coastal lowlands, connect with their forces struggling eastward over the hot sands along the Gulf of Aden from Zela, and make a more large-scale attack against Berbera. Although there is no word regarding it, the likelihood is that the Italian column which occupied Bahatli Wells in southeastern Somaliland last week is now moving northwestward toward Barau, whence it will attempt to storm the mountain pass leading down to Berbera by way of Sheikh, the seat of the British government.
With this report and analysis of the news by Linton Wells, CBS correspondents have reported on the latest developments in the European situation. Tony Marvin speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.